Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Voices That Cook. This is your host, William Nunn, who is a voice actor who also likes to cook. And I am on here talking with other voice actors who also like to cook. And one I have today for our sixth episode, I am incredibly excited about. This is my very good friend, very talented singer and voiceover extraordinaire, Melissa Medina. Hello, Melissa. How are you today?
Hola. Good. I'm doing really good. I like the description of voice actor / people who love to cook and eat, because that is exactly the perfect description.
Yes, absolutely. And I was really amazed that there were that many people. Well, I know a lot of people like to eat food, but in general, finding out that there are so many voice actors who also enjoy cooking as much, if not more so, than I do is something that I didn't think would be that plentiful. But it was like, well, I'd like to bring these people on a show and see what happens. And I knew I wanted to have you on the show. You were one of the first people I thought of. So I was very happy to hear you say yes and now have you on here and hear you actually speak. So I'm very happy about that.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course, anytime. Normally, with a lot of stuff involving the show, we usually go through sort of a formula of like voice acting origins, then cooking origins, and favorite recipes to conclude the show. But I also know that with this being Halloween season right now, or at least I'm starting it early, and I know your love for horror movies, I figured we'd throw in some horror movie conversation in here as well, because I want us to have fun.
Fantastic. So
I know that there are probably some listeners on here who have some familiarity with your work and other things you have been in. And if not, you guys need to look her up and see all the awesome stuff, or even hear all the awesome stuff she is in, which I'll get into a few of those here in a bit. But I did want to ask real quick, just so that in case anyone's not familiar with you, what got you started in voiceover?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I got into voiceover when I was taking my first vacation from work in 10 years. Like, I hadn't taken a vacation in that long. And I started listening to an audiobook, and I fell in love with the audiobook and the narration especially. And then I just fell into an audiobook-shaped hole and was like, this is a job, right? How do you do this? Who do I talk to? And I started out doing audiobooks. And then I fell into video games, and I haven't left since. But I also do a little bit of everything. I mean, commercial work, promos, trailers, toys. I mean, all kinds of stuff. I've been having a lot of fun. Way too much fun, probably.
That's always the best response to have for any job you do is, I'm having too much fun with it. And I actually looked up the other day to see just how many audiobooks you were in, and there's quite a lot.
Yeah, I have about 50 or so that I have not touched in a very long time. They're not great.
Could you also answer for me, what was that particular audiobook that you listened to that made you go, I'd like to do this?
Well, funny you mentioned, because we're on the subject of horror, I'm pretty sure it was The Watchtower from Stephen King. I want to say that's what it was, because the movie had just come out, or it was about to come out. And I thought, you know what? That's one of the few Stephen King books that I haven't read. And I wanted to be able to do other things during my vacation. So I got the audiobook version, and that's what made me go down that path, I guess.
Nice. That is something I actually need to do at some point. I probably won't do it this year because I've already got myself lined up with other audiobooks to listen to right now. Mm-hmm. But next year, I really want to start going into more of Stephen King's content, because the only audiobook from Stephen King I've actually listened to was The Mist.
Oh.
And I did like that story, but I wish it ended differently. And the reason why I say that is because I'm without spoiling anything for anyone who hasn't checked out The Mist.
Good luck.
I wish the last few quote unquote minutes or pages, if you will, weren't there. Like, And I say that because, like, there could have been this really great element to where you feel like you are reading someone's journal of what's been happening, and mm-hmm. it just felt very sort of, well, in case I don't get back, make sure that I'll just let you know in case maybe I don't come back that, you know, blah, 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 blah. When what would have been great to me would have been he finishes up the scene, says that, you know, he's going to go take care of this thing, and then you start flipping pages.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in them. And I'm like, I wish that's what would have happened. I would have felt really sad at that point. But no, it just had a very, yeah, this is clearly where the story's wrapping up right now.
Yeah, it could take you out of it. Yeah, I can see that.
But as someone who I'm going to assume you've read quite a few Stephen King stuff in the past,
yes.
So I really would like your recommendations, actually, and maybe recommendations for our listeners here.
Oh man,
I really want to check out there's three in particular I want to check out.
Okay.
Because I finally watched the original Pet Sematary last year.
What?
Wait a minute. No, it wasn't this year. It was this year. Yeah. I finally watched it for the first time.
Damn.
I know. Don't choke me.
Don't want to.
I really dug that movie.
Okay.
And would
good.
Like to read the source material,
mm-hmm.
Or listen to it in this case. I also want to check out Salem's Lot, which I have never experienced.
Okay.
Really want to.
Okay.
And I want to know if The Stand is worth checking out as well.
So that would be my first recommendation, to be perfectly honest, The Stand. It is a dense book. Like, it is really dense. And most of Stephen King's books are pretty dense because back in the day, I think he got paid by page. He would write, yeah, back when he started, I think, like, The Stand came out in, like, I don't know, 78 or something. You could check me on that. I don't know. But around that time, and he got paid per page. And so what he would do is he would write these long exchanges of dialogue, which, you know, spaces things out, you know, and which I think is genius. But also that's why he's very good at dialogue and, like, establishing relationships between characters. And The Stand is really, really good for that. So I recommend The Stand, even though it is an adventure. Like, you have to power through it because it is a long book. But I think it's worth it because The Stand is one of the few stories from Stephen King that the film adaptations just haven't been able to do any kind of justice to at all. I guess you could say that about more than that. But there are some where it's so like the story is so simple, like Cujo or Christine, that, like, okay, that's pretty simple. The film adaptation is fine. But for The Stand and probably The Watchtower, they're so such big universes that nobody's really been able to bring them to the screen very well, which is why I recommend the book.
Gotcha. I will definitely try to check out The Stand next year, hopefully. I also do want to mention that back when I was in college, I actually did write a paper on Stephen King's autobiography.
Oh.
So that's actually the only Stephen King book I have sat down and read from start to finish because I had to write a paper on it. And it was actually quite interesting.
Yeah.
So I've always had this interesting curiosity towards wanting to check out more of his work for a long time. I just hadn't gotten around to it. But outside of, obviously, I want to check out that. And what other stories would you say are worth definitely checking out from Stephen King, especially if you've heard the audiobook versions by any chance?
Oh, gosh. Well, The Watchtower for sure was a really, really good audiobook version. I can't remember who did the audio, which is really bad. But yeah, so that one was a good one. What else do I like? I'm trying to think. There's some stuff that he did under pseudonyms as well that was not horror. That is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
They did a film adaptation of something called Hearts in Atlantis. I think it had Anthony Hopkins in it. But that was written under Stephen King's pseudonym, and it is not horror, but it is really good. Oh, and Storm of the Century. You're going to just have me start naming things because I love all of it. Storm of the Century is really, really good. But, you know, you do some classics like Night Shift and what else was good? Tommyknockers, Dreamcatcher. All of those are really good. Yeah.
I've heard good things about Dreamcatcher.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's so hard to describe because there are like these twists and turns and stuff that are very spoilery. And same thing goes with like, I actually really love the movie version of Dr. Sleep, which is the continuation of The Shining.
I do too.
You like the movie version?
I do. I really do.
Oh man, don't even get me started on Mike Flanagan right now. He's the director. I've loved his work since like his first movie and I've been watching him do stuff and I'm like, yay! But yeah, the Dr. Sleep was fantastic. It's a great book. It's a great movie. I don't care what anybody says. Ewan McGregor is like one of the most slept on actors right now. So I think he did awesome. I love the whole thing.
I was genuinely happy that like I remember rewatching The Shining right before going to see Dr. Sleep in a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that the movie actually answers some questions.
Yes.
While also still like keeping the awesome tension and mystique about The Shining still preserved very well. So it's like it doesn't ruin anything.
No.
It just makes you kind of understand what's going on a bit more.
Exactly. And the thing that I think people thought when that movie came out was like, how are you ever going to try to live up to Stanley Kubrick, you know? And the answer is you don't. The answer that Mike Flanagan had was, no, I'm going to do something different, but also honor the original movies and the original story and do like a really faithful adaptation of the book. And he did that. So I thought it was awesome.
Nice. Speaking of awesome horror stories, I did want to mention to everyone, and I do have this, I am going to have this on my description box below. There was a project that you did that I absolutely adored called Under My Skin, which was a audio drama that you did a while back.
Yeah.
I really want people to listen to that.
Aww.
It is a very, very good story, creepy and I love the atmosphere in it and the talent involved and, of course, your narration.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, like, what was that – what was the process behind wanting to put that story together?
Honestly, I don't write very often. I don't, like, consider myself a writer. But I just had this this idea in my head from my time living in Seattle. And so that's kind of where the story is set. But in Seattle, you have these, you know, I don't know if you've ever been, but they have these just amazing, huge, massive pine trees everywhere. And where I used to live when I wasn't living in downtown Seattle, you could very much see how the trees would just sort of cut through buildings and cut them off from each other like a fence.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, a place that I lived just sort of backed up against all this forest. And it would get, you know, being in Seattle, very rainy, gloomy, misty, foggy at night. And I would always just sort of stare out into the trees and wonder what was out there. And that's kind of what made me write the story. And I don't think there's enough horror or mystery or whatever genre it is. I don't even know. I don't think there's enough stories that start two women either as friends or becoming lovers or anything like that, especially when they're young and figuring things out. So I wanted to make it that, you know, I really love that arc of adversaries become lovers sort of thing. Or adversaries let it consume them and like destroy each other. So yeah, that's kind of what the story became, was that like a, I don't know if you've ever saw that movie Death Becomes Her, but
No, but my mom really wants me to see it.
It's a really good Golden Age Goldie Hawn, Bruce Willis, and for once like a really funny, gorgeous Meryl Streep. And that's the vibe with them, is that they're like both fighting over Bruce Willis, and they're both just conniving, awful people. And they end up just sort of destroying each other. Spoilers, because it's been like 30 years, okay?
Yep.
But yeah, so that's kind of what inspired me, was I wanted to play around with that idea. And like this idea of obsession, but also empathy and compassion, and having it be all complicated and knotted up. So thank you for bringing that up, because I don't even know how many people listen to it. Probably not many, but I was really happy with how it turned out. So
I was too. And I still remember it. And I will likely listen to it again in October, because I want to, I'm currently working on something that I'd like to hear for ideas and things and such and blah, 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 that I won't announce all right now, but,
mysterious.
I'm excited about that. And, I also really enjoyed hearing you in not only other audio dramas and such, but primarily in there was there were like two audiobooks that kind of exist in the same universe with a full cast involved. Mm-hmm. And it started out with Datto and then Pursuit of Arlenia, which I also mm-hmm. got to be in.
Yeah.
Those were very awesome to listen to, and I'm still – there are times where I still pinch myself. I got to be in Pursuit of Arlenia. What were those experiences like for you in that case, where instead of having to narrate an audiobook, you were just part of it?
Oh, it was so much nicer. Not having to do all the narration. I can't remember who it was that did the narration. I think he might have done the narration for both. I can't remember. But just a trooper, because it was a lot. It was a very, you know, dense story, but also really cinematic. Like, that's one of the things I just adore about T.S. Weiland and working with him, is how cinematic his stories are and how well they lend themselves to audio productions. So, yeah, when I got in with Datto, gosh, I don't even know how long ago that was. Maybe 2 years, something like that. It was
like
one of my first role projects that I was really happy to be a part of and proud of, and like wanted people to listen to, because it reminded me of Alien, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, we'll get to that.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I got to be snarky, and yeah, it was great. And then, you know, now I will just, no matter what I do, I will always jump at an opportunity to work with Taylor again and help in any way I can. So I was glad when he approached me to play Madame Mosul in Pursuit of was it Pursuit of Arlenia?
That's right.
Yeah. Because that was a lot of fun, because I just kind of like coming in where he just has me come in and be snarky and kind of sarcastic, and then I leave and I'm like, cool, this is fantastic. So yeah, I don't know. It was a lot of fun. And you did everybody did a great job in the cast too. So I was really, really happy as I was listening to it. I was like, yes, go guys.
Quick moving off point for everyone. There was a point where I got to be in a class a long time ago. It had to have been like early 2020 or somewhere around, maybe even 2019. I don't know. But I remember specifically we were doing this exercise for it might have been effort noises or something along the lines. I don't remember what exactly it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember one particular person was complimenting me on my performance, and it was you. And I've always taken that compliment, whatever you said. Like, I remember the feeling of just, the woman with the lovely voice actually thinks I sounded good. This means I'm doing something right. So blame Melissa for making me want to continue pursuing voiceover.
Yes.
After that class. So so being able to hear, you know, there's times where we are surprised by like how even just a simple compliment can perk someone's spirits for that day. So
yeah,
thank
sure.
you for not just that, and also the kind words for Pursuit of Arlenia, because that was a very interesting process for me to go through. That was my first NDA project. That
Ooh.
Was one that had a very interesting thing to go through. But I'm glad I it ended up going the way it did, and I am very happy with the performance I gave, even though my character was a total creep.
Everybody needs a creep. Still,
yeah, it was one of those where Soren was just like, if you say no to playing that character, who is the interviewer, for those that don't know, if you say no to playing that character, I totally understand. And I said, I will give him a whirl for you. I will give him a whirl. And I just had a session with Kelsey that day to have someone to bounce off with. And I remember after my first run of us doing that scene, I apologized immediately.
I'm sorry for being such a creep.
It's fine. Which also, I got to actually meet her recently in Texas, which that led to a lot of fun foods and feedings and all that stuff. It was such an amazing trip. It was such a great trip. And we'll get to the foods here in a sec. But I wanted to mention two other things with you before we get into the food stuff. You had mentioned Alien. And I am really glad that I remember there being like you would do like these movie hangouts and y'all were watching Aliens at one point, and I couldn't make it for that, but later on it ended up being like there was like one of those, you know, posts for this new Alien game coming out, and you had those wide-eyed reactions to it, not saying anything, and I was like, wait.
Yeah, I remember
that. And then it was like the next day you made it official, and I was not only super excited, but I mean, Melissa Medina in a fucking Aliens game. That's incredible. You're in Aliens Fireteam Elite, and I've honestly been having a lot of fun playing it.
Oh, good. I'm glad. It was a lot of fun, and I work with some just outstandingly talented people on the team, like the producer Darrow Farrell and all the folks at Cold Iron and stuff. Like, I ended up just talking to most of them. They're just remarkably cool people, and all of them were fans of the franchise, which, you know, it's going to be good when like the people making it are actually fans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a blast, and yeah, I lost my mind getting that role. The weird thing was, I wasn't going to audition for it. Like, so, you know, in casting calls, they'll often ask for someone like, oh, we want someone that, you know, maybe has a Dominican background or something like that. And I was like, oh, well, you know, that's not me. I'm Mexican, you know, different country. I auditioned for some synth roles in the game, and, you know, it's just some AI robot stuff. And they came back and said, hey, you know, we really like your voice. Can you audition for Hereda? And I was like, oh, well, I wasn't going to, but if you want me to, I will. And when I did that, they were like, yep, done. We found the voice of Hereda. Perfect. And that was it. So that was really cool. I almost didn't get it. Like, I almost didn't do it. And it's crazy to think about now.
It's really something how... And it's a good reminder, too, for anyone that's wanting to get into more projects and everything else. It's just good to submit, even if it's like not the ideal role. Maybe it's like, you know, I'll try out for the robot that I'll try out for, you know, someone that maybe I wouldn't say anyone can play, because obviously to play the simps and fire team, they've got to have some intensity and all that sort of stuff and different aspects. But just being able to put your foot in the door and let them hear you. And they might go, actually, we think you might be better for this, which that kind of happened with me for Pursuit of Erlenia. So I just find that very interesting that that was what happened. It was like a story like that feels like a meant to be sort of aspect, which I'm very, very happy for you on that one.
Thanks.
And I also just love the fact that my friend is in an Aliens video game and part of the franchise now.
Man, I grew up watching those movies and quoting it constantly to like annoy the crap out of my parents. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. And now like my my niece, who, you know, I don't talk to her all that much, but she reached out to me and she was like, "Are you in an Aliens game?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she went, "Holy crap." So now my, you know, yeah, my family members are playing it, and it's pretty crazy. Yeah. I'm having fun watching people play it and like argue with me. Whenever they're going
argue
through.
With you.
Yeah, like, you know, I do the voice of the radio.
They're like talking, like going, "Why are you telling me to do that?"
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, I want to do it this way. And I'm over here like, "Do this." And yeah, it's great to hear them arguing with my voice. One of these days I want to see if I could stream it and just like be on live chat or something and people be like, "Wait, is that your voice? Wait, no. I'm just playing this game. I'm just a random person."
I just want to see just how many people just go, "You sound a lot like..."
Exactly.
"You sound very familiar. Maybe I heard her in Cold Open Stories on the Hunter's Watch. I think that's where I heard her from."
That's so specific.
I know. And out of all of the projects I have heard you in... Mm. That's one of my all-time favorite performances that I've heard you do so far.
Wow,
was in the second episode. I mean, there's a moment that's very emotional in that episode. And for those of you who don't know, On the Hunter's Watch is a new audio drama created by Cold Open Stories that's set in the Warhammer 40K universe. Not official with Games Workshop, but it is still a compelling series. Mm-hmm. And I got to be in Hounds of Bedlam. And that was a great story there, but I knew from the first episode, like, this is going to be something amazing, just from the music, how the sound effects were handled, and also the fact that the two leads were my good friends, Megan Humans and Melissa Medina. So I'm just I'm like, okay, y'all are going to crush it already, just from that casting announcement.
I
hear the episode.
Yeah, I have to say real quick, just a shout out to Megan on that, because the accent that she was doing and all of the really tough names, you know, the names are like 12 syllables long and stuff. That was a lot of stuff to go through. I think I got the easier side of that where I didn't have to do a lot of that stuff. So shout out to her for being so good at that.
I really wanted to know, like, For a role like that, what kind of did you have to do much research for it at all? Did you just think more about just what was on the page more so than maybe the source material of Warhammer or anything along those lines, especially with how heavy the subject matter is?
Yeah, exactly. The cool thing was I was able to meet with Colin DeGraff, the creative director behind Cold Open Stories, and we kind of sat down and he said, "You know, this story is really important to me and I want to make sure, you know, that we're bringing it to life well and, you know, the points get across." And he did a great job of getting me acquainted with the universe, because I had very minimal knowledge before this of any of that stuff. So he got me up to speed very quickly. And we had talked about, like, you could approach it this way, you could approach it that way. And I just kind of said, you know what I think will have the most emotional impact is if I just plug it directly into my life and my own feelings about things. My own, like, vulnerabilities and regrets. And so that character is very, very close to me in my experiences and the way that I see things, and or at least used to, you know, before when I was younger and dumber. But yeah, so I decided to do that to, like, give it, like, a sense of authenticity. And so instead of, like, trying to show off and doing all this other stuff, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go through and just be really pure about this. And I guess it worked out. I've gotten some really good feedback, like, from you and a couple of other people that were like, "I'm in tears right now." And
yeah,
that was great.
I definitely had tears. I also completely understand where, because I thought the theme was very strong of,
yeah,
where it almost felt like, you know, you start out your life believing in one thing and then realizing, oh, there's some things about this that are genuinely not right.
Mm-hmm.
And you still want to believe it. You still want to believe it's the right thing, and it's really not. Mm-hmm. And there's really something wrong, and you have to confront it or run from it. And
yeah,
I just thought the whole conflict that you were going through in that episode was very strong. It even for just a half an hour episode, like, this was very good quality stuff. And I can't wait for the next episode. I hope that will be coming out soon.
Yes. Yeah, they're doing something special, I think, for the next one. So I'm not going to say what, because no spoilers, but I think it'll be good. They've adapted some of the story to, like, some of the response that they got. And yeah, it's going to be really good. I can't wait.
Awesome. Awesome. I will be patient. I will be patient. I have plenty of other things to go through, listen to, and all that good stuff in the meantime. But also, another thing we can do in the meantime is talk food.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to ask you, because I know we both have a love for tacos, but I wanted to know, like, did you ever, like, have a start in cooking that just made you go, ooh, I really like to make food?
Huh. I liked baking. That's how I started cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sort of like a type A personality, shocker. I would cook with my parents when I was younger, and they would always just sort of like fly by the seat of their pants, right? And be like, I don't know, put, and my mom says, like, Hispanics are often notorious for, like, just put some of that and some of that, like, not even measuring, just whatever, put whatever you want in there. And I couldn't get my head around that. Like, I needed a recipe. And so my dad was like, well, if you like recipes and you like very exact things, try baking. So I fell in love with that. Like, making, what do I make? Croissants, all kinds of cookies. Like, I'm really good at making cookies.
Nice.
Yeah. I found this just the perfect balance for, like, fluffiness and softness, you know, because you can't, like, having a hard cookie is just the worst. It's the worst.
Yeah.
And then I started branching out from there, like, into Mexican food. Like, my mom cooked a lot of Mexican food. My dad was a grill master, so he did a lot of barbecue in Texas, naturally. So those are the two types of, or the three types of foods that I really do very well is desserts, Mexican food, and barbecue. Yeah.
Oh, I wish I had a smoker. I really wish I had a smoker.
I'll get you a green egg. Yeah.
I think that's actually what it was called that a friend of mine's dad has. And it looked very flexible and very easy to use. And I really want to get it. I really want to get it real freaking bad.
You should if you can.
But I will say baking is something that I am genuinely frightened to do.
Why?
And I want to not be frightened of it. Well, my mom and I made really crappy banana bread. And it just made me go, I probably need to study this a bit more, but at some point I will actually bake something. And I've also promised on this show on multiple occasions that I will make my own pizza crust, that
nice.
Will be a thing that will happen. But cookies, though, I do remember actually making, I don't think it was a very complicated cookie. I just remember that there was a lot of things that were kind of already set up. But since my brother and I were really big fans of Space Ghost Coast to Coast back when we were younger,
I love that.
We would make cookies that were shaped like Zorak and Space Ghost and I think Moltar, just to see how they would look coming out. And they were tasty from what I remember. But I would like to make my own cookies at some point. Cakes, I am forbidding myself from because I know if I learn how to make cakes, I will just never stop. I will have a big tummy after a while.
Would you get into the decoration part or would you just be like, all cake, just throw some frosting on it. The cake is what I want.
I would probably start out with, I want to just do everything with, you know, the toppings, the frostings, and just make it all num, 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 mine. But I do love the creative process of being able to make your food look good. I think that is it's not only fun, but it makes looking at it before you eat it just all the more appetizing and sensational. Excuse me. And of course, there's also the fact that you can do all sorts of things with your foo, with seasonings and toppings and all that sort of stuff to just make it look, I wouldn't call it pristine, but just make it look like I would eat that. I would totally eat that. I don't care what it is. I would eat it and I would chomp every bite of it down. And that's how I like to at least present the already prepared crust pizzas that I've made in the past. And I want to do that myself when I'm ready to make my own. And after eating a Neapolitan pizza while I was in Texas, I'm like, yeah, I really need to make my own pizza because this was perfection. Hell, Korean food is perfection too. I have finally jumped on that bandwagon. I want Korean hot wings every day if I can.
Korean barbecue. If you haven't already talked to Jun Yoon, you should, because he knows his stuff about Korean barbecue.
He specifically, I'm not making this up, he specifically said, put me in episode 12. Whenever time it's like, okay, I've recorded episode 11, I'm going to message June and say, okay, I've recorded 11 episodes so far. Episode 12 is your episode. So we're doing this.
That's
and
awesome.
I definitely want to talk to him more about Korean food and Korean barbecue, because that was the one thing we missed out on while I was in Texas. I didn't get to eat Korean food or Korean barbecue. I mean,
yeah.
I had Korean corn dogs, where like mozzarella cheese was inside and fried potatoes were on the outside, and it was seasoned with sugar.
Huh.
It was very good. It was very good.
Okay, I'll believe you. On paper, I don't know, but
on paper it sounds weird, but it's tasty. It's actually pretty tasty. I didn't think it would be. But I was willing to trust Kelsey's judgment, and Jordan was a fan of them too, Jordan David Cruz. That was such a surprisingly good meal. The pizza was great, and I even had creamy Cajun Creole pasta for lunch the following day, which I didn't even finish. It was huge. And I had that
Texas.
I had that there while we were meeting up with Jacob Wilson, who, for those of you who remember the previous episode, he was on that one.
Jacob.
Yes, he's a wonderful person, and I'm so glad I got to meet him.
Good.
And then I had Tex-Mex later on with Marissa Medina, not Marissa Medina. Marissa Duran, there we go. Marissa Duran, who I'm very thrilled I got to meet her finally, and it's just wonderful to meet voice actors in person. It really is.
Yeah.
So I will say though, I'm also very happy to finally say out loud that I got to make food for my friends and they really enjoyed it, and they were the birria tacos.
Nice.
I am so glad, because I was so nervous because the meat we were cooking with, like, we had, like, a chuck roast that was 3.80 pounds. It was pretty big. And by the time it was through needing to, like, simmer for a little while, it didn't feel like it was relatively warm. So I was like, uh-oh, did it not cook enough or whatever? So I decided to heat it up a bit more. And then it started to get really thick because I had turned the heat up while I was letting it heat up while we were watching the rest of Star Wars Visions.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, for anyone who wants to know my quick thoughts real quick, The Duel, The Ninth Jedi, and The Elder are fantastic. The rest, that's just too long to talk about. But I really, 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 really am glad that they ended up enjoying it. And it took like 6 hours for the whole thing to be ready, but it was worth it.
Nice. Very nice. That sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Very good. You know what's also good?
What?
John Carpenter.
Nice segue.
Yes. Yes.
Nice segue.
I wanted to make sure we covered John Carpenter while we were on here. So I now have to ask, what got you into John Carpenter's filmography?
The fact that My confession is, I used to hate the movie Halloween. Like, hate it. I thought it was so stupid. Mostly because of Michael Myers. Like, I grew up loving Freddy Krueger, okay? And as I got older, I started disliking Freddy Krueger and liking Michael Myers more. And so as I got older, I rewatched Halloween and I noticed all of these things that I didn't notice before. You know, this like unstoppable force, this like, and how like scary it is that he's quiet rather than, you know, Freddy Krueger like popping off puns and like is really not threatening in any way. I rewatched Halloween and fell in love with it. And then I thought, well, what else has John Carpenter done? So I started going through the list and I had heard of like most of the movies that he made. But I watched them when I was very, very young and could not appreciate them. So I just went through and rewatched everything and I fell in love with like the majority of his work. The only movie that I knew about and loved as a kid that I still love was Big Trouble in Little China. Like, I love that movie, as problematic as it can be at times. I really loved it. And my brothers would like scare me because in the movie they were like, oh, they're going after people with green eyes. And I was like, no, you know, like, but yeah, I know. So, I'm going through right now, like, over the past week, going through his entire filmography from start to finish, because there were a few that I still haven't really seen, like Escape from New York and Vampires and Prince of Darkness and like Ghosts of Mars. So there are a few that I haven't seen that I really need to see, but I also want to rewatch my favorites. Like, I love The Thing. I could talk about The Thing forever. It's an amazing movie. I think, who was it? I want to say it was Sarah Ruth Thomas that watched it for the first time recently.
Yes,
and I was like messaging her like, what did you think? What was it? Wasn't it amazing? And she's like, oh my God, that dog, you know? Like, I was like, oh, you're at the good part now. So yes. I knew she was watching it and I'm just sitting back like, you know, like wait till you see the next part.
I got to finally introduce that movie to my brother last year.
Oh, really?
And we were watching it with a couple of friends of ours. And whenever it got to the dog scene, one of my friends literally left the room. It's like, that's the only part I can't watch. That's the only part I can't watch. And my brother was just, I just looked at his face when some of the transformation stuff was starting to happen. He just had this disturbed look on his face. I mean, he dug the movie, but he was definitely feeling the effect of how effective the transformation sequences and the creature effects and the
because
practical
effects Because of the
effects
practical
are.
Effects. Exactly. Yep. Those practical effects are so good, even today, even compared to CG stuff.
It holds up so well, and it's some of the best that I think has ever been put to film, and it looks even better on Blu-ray. I really am happy with having that on Blu-ray and all of the special features that come with it to learn how they put it together. It is so cool.
I haven't seen it on Blu-ray. Now I want to.
You should.
Yeah, I'm about to get into They Live, I think, right now, which is another one, which is like not really
good.
Horror, but it's so good.
It is really good.
Simultaneously.
And also features.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and it also features from The Thing, the King, Chief David.
Yes. I was going to say, it's one of the cheesiest on in his catalog. And there are some moments where you're like, what is going on? This is so dumb. And I mean, the guy that they chose to star in it was not a great actor. Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
Not a great actor. But the message like carried itself. It carried the entire thing. And I will never forget, dude, seeing John Carpenter perform all of his cinematic music live in a concert in Seattle. That was like...
Nice.
It was amazing. And I expected the whole place to be sold out, and it wasn't. So like I found out about it, I'd say like the day before. And I was like, oh, I can't believe there's still tickets. You know, it's probably going to be really crappy tickets. And, you know, I was sitting pretty far back on the second tier. And then we realized that, like, most people either hadn't showed up or didn't get tickets. So we all got to move forward by, like, 10 rows. And it was fantastic. He was playing all of his songs. He had scenes from the movies, like, playing behind him.
Nice.
And he was like sharing stories about how he composed the songs and why. And it was fantastic. It was easily one of my top concerts ever. Yeah.
That's so cool. I really love his Anthologies album. That's nice. The one I go back to because I really love how he kind of like he kept them the way they were meant to be, but there's a bit of an added oomph to them.
Mm-hmm.
And while I will be the first to say, and this may be hot take, if you will, probably my first hot take on the show. I do not love Escape from New York, but that theme song is absolutely amazing.
Oh, so good. Thank you. Okay. I mean, I haven't really seen the movie to say one way or the other, but. Yeah, that theme is amazing. Yeah.
It's got amazing cinematography, and Kurt Russell crushes it in the movie, and it's responsible for my favorite video game series of all time, Metal Gear Solid.
Yes.
But I've watched it twice, and both times I wasn't really crazy about it, but the music's great. I love hearing the music, and I didn't think Escape from LA was much better, but I also remember there was like this really brief period where I wasn't as into John Carpenter as well than most people were outside of Halloween and The Thing.
Sure.
But once I started to understand more of how he would do his movies and some of the other aspects toward it, I kind of appreciated them more. But I also strongly felt, and you may find this really funny, when I first saw Big Trouble in Little China, I thought the ending was stupid originally.
The whole movie's stupid.
The whole movie's dumb, but I thought the ending was like, oh, come on, for real? Really? And then I saw it again, and with the context of the opening scene, the ending is now hilarious to me. Like, I had forgotten that intro happened for some reason. Like, I had forgotten they were talking about that specific subject for those who haven't seen the movie. But now that I was like, oh, so now when that moment happens, it's like, that's funny. That's actually really funny. And now I appreciate the movie way more. And
yeah.
I also am like, yeah, I see where Mortal Kombat got half of its influences.
Yeah, exactly. That's the weird thing about John Carpenter's movies is that somehow they age really well, even when they're cheesy and ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, they still age well. And this makes me really want to watch Escape from New York now because, like I said, I knew of the movie growing up. And maybe, just maybe, Kurt Russell in that movie might have defined the type of guys I find attractive, but which now looking back on it is really douchey. But yeah, like when I was a kid, I was like, I'm really attracted to this movie and I don't know why. But yeah, I need to rewatch it and see. It's probably not great, but I'm going to watch it anyway and dream about how Kurt Russell used to look.
I will say it's worth a watch for the sake of history and for all my Metal Gear brethren. You got to watch it at least once to see where Kojima was getting ideas for Solid Snake because he had Snake Plissken in that one.
Yep.
And I remember there being an interview where someone actually asked John, like, why did you never sue Hideo Kojima over basically making a character based off of your character? And he was like, because Hideo Kojima is a really nice guy.
Yeah. I love that. See, John Carpenter is such a nice freaking guy. It's so great. He's not like the Hollywood type, you know? Like
I know. And I really am happy that he's still able to make music for Halloween at this point, which...
Yes!
Looking forward to the new one. I hope it will be good.
I hope... Like, at least they brought him in as a producer, I think. I think he was a producer.
Oh, and yeah. I also wanted to mention this. Since you had mentioned Freddy, mm-hmm. I finally watched all 9 Freddy Krueger movies.
Oh, wow. What did you think?
Okay, so...
That's
the original.
A complicated question.
The original is an amazing movie. I love the original, despite the ending being stupid, but it does have a great payoff at the very last moment of just making you feel scared. But they did that mainly for it was like not even Wes Craven's call for that point, so I can't really blame him for that. 2 was, I actually liked 2, but after finding out that it has so many homosexual undertones, that completely went over my head, and now I'm like... Now it all makes even more sense to me now. How did I miss that? That was meaning what it was meaning to mean. And apparently I was not the only one. Even a lot of the filmmakers were like, we didn't think that. And it's like, yeah, of course, a whole bunch of tennis balls being knocked into the coach's face. That should have meant something. And I didn't think twice about it. Among a million other things, please watch the movie with the context of, there's a lot of, it's probably the gayest horror movie that no one else realized that it was pretty gay. And I find that funny.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Okay. But there are some, the first one is a legitimately good movie, right? Mm-hmm. Great final girl trope, all of that stuff. 2, I was like, okay, fine. 3, Dream Warriors. I think it's 3. If I remember correctly,
3.
Dream Warriors was ridiculous, but it had arguably, and I think I was telling, I want to say it was Dave Capdeville about this, Dream Warriors has the best, one of the best horror themes ever to exist in a movie.
Yes.
Because it's 80s hair metal. I want to say it's Dokken or something like that.
Yeah,
that does.
It's Dokken.
Yes, that does this 80s hair metal Dream Warriors. It's so good. Like, if you watch it just for the title song, that's totally fine.
I was genuinely delighted with Dream Warriors. I thought the concept of being able to use your dreams and what you wish for yourself to be to combat Freddy was a very good idea. I had no idea that Frank Darabont actually was involved in the writing process with that movie. He was one of the co-writers for it. Wes Craven started out writing it along with someone else, and then they kind of wanted to – there was another director and Frank that wanted to make it a bit more imaginative. And it has some of my favorite kills in the franchise in that movie. There's the whole puppet strings one and – and then there was the girl getting her head put through the TV.
Yeah.
Welcome to primetime, bitch! It was hysterical and kind of dark.
So stupid. Okay, but what did you... Did you watch New Nightmare?
I really like that movie.
Did you watch
I will
New
get
Nightmare?
To New Nightmare.
Oh, okay, okay.
But I will get to it because that's a very important topic. I watched 4... while eating leftover food and having some alcohol. And I thought, I am so glad I have a slight buzz right now watching how silly the Dream Master is.
Yes.
It was fine. It was fine. It was kind of, but it does have probably my favorite kill in the whole series.
Which
where
is?
A woman literally turns into a cockroach.
Oh, and Kafka-esque, yeah.
Yeah, she literally is like, gets her, her body is completely covered in sap, like the sticky trap sap stuff. And as soon as her head comes out of the sap, it falls apart and turns into this big prosthetic cockroach head that looked pretty believable at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that there's a little window where the room is that she's in, and she's stuck with all these other cockroaches, And there's this big eye that's looking at her. And then we pan out and it's Freddy holding this box and he just squashes it with his hand.
So dramatic.
That part was worth seeing the movie for me personally. That was worth it.
So that's your first, that's your favorite Freddy kill?
That's probably my favorite Freddy kill. But then 5 and 6 were utter garbage.
Yeah.
So I was pretty much like, why am I still watching these? But I'm committing. I am committing. I'm going through all of them because I made a commitment. And then New Nightmare happened. And I was so fucking happy. I was so happy on so many levels and how surprised I was by how good that was.
Yeah, because it became self-aware. Like, I think that was the thing that really made that movie good was, you know, they brought Robert Englund on as himself a few times. And they talked about, like, the cultural impact of Freddy Krueger. And I don't know, like, you know, the actress from the first movie, I think, right, was in it?
Heather, yeah, she was playing herself. And what I thought was so brilliant about the movie was whenever Freddy would start to invade the real world, or at least the dreams of people in our natural world, there were these things that would happen where, like, you would want to, you know, obviously tell people what's going on, but they'll think you're crazy. It's like, dude, Freddy Krueger was a guy in a movie. He's not real. It's like, that's a great concept where it's like, yeah, he is. And he's going after my kid and he's killing people. And there's, like, hardly any deaths, but when did they happen? They're fucking visceral. They made Freddy scary again, and I love the way he looked in the movie. And he's actually there's never a credit for Freddy Krueger in the credits. It's just Robert Englund as himself. Freddy Krueger was just an evil presence that was on set.
I like that. That's when you know that you're made for a character.
Exactly. And then I watched Freddy vs. Jason, which I had honestly seen multiple times when I was a teenager. And now watching it with the context of the other Freddy movies before it, I had a bit more of an appreciation for at least the makeup job they did on him and a few other things. But he only kills one person in the whole movie, which is kind of shitty, in my opinion.
It's interesting, the Freddy versus Jason thing, because I think they really did, like, focus on the showdown, right? But the director of that movie, Ronnie Yu, I think, he also did one of my other favorite ones, which is Bride of Chucky. And again, reinvigorated a franchise by just having fun with it. Like, that's the thing. Freddy versus Jason is not a good movie. It's just fun.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. Like, why not have fun with it?
And then after I finished Freddy vs. Jason, I watched the reboot and I was pretty let down by it. I was like, yeah, I'm glad they stopped there.
I have never been able to get through that.
Just, it's not worth it. As much as I love Jackie Earle Haley, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I could see that. I just always fall asleep. Like, I don't know, 30 minutes into, I'm like, it's 30 minutes into this movie and nothing has happened. And I get distracted.
And they try to do, like, a whole thing where, like, they want to make you briefly, very briefly sympathize with Freddy, which just doesn't work.
No.
No. And of course, you find out later what he did. And
he's a pedophile.
In the original... Yeah. And in the original, they kind of subtly hint at what kind of atrocities he committed outside of just murder. But in the reboot, it was like, they don't say it out loud, but it's like, clearly, yeah, that's what he did. Okay. Yeah, I know. That's what, I know. You can kill him now, or at least try to, because he somehow keeps coming back. Which was why I love New Nightmare so much. That you can literally end the franchise right there.
Yeah, they should.
It's a perfect ending for that right there. I actually now want to ask you, because I watched the original Chucky a few years ago and I love the hell out of it. What Chucky movies are worth watching?
Oh gosh. There, so Chucky franchise is interesting in that it massively changes in intention. How do I put it? The first one, obviously. I think once they introduced Jennifer Tilly, it gets a bit more interesting. So that's what I would say, because I think if I remember correctly, and it's been a while, Child's Play 2 is pretty much just a repeat of Child's Play 1.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think you can just go with the first one on that. But also, can I just say how amazing Brad Dourif is at like everything he does? Because yeah. Brad Dourif is amazing. But yeah, Child's Play, Bride of Chucky is good because it's ridiculous. I think somewhere along the line, you know, you had Child's Play 2, Child's Play 3, all of which were kind of doing the same thing over and over and over again. But Bride of Chucky made it so that you could continue and take the franchise in a different direction. So I say Bride of Chucky, even Seed of Chucky. But you have to understand that, like, Child's Play and the Bride of Chucky stuff, it's not even close to the same in tone. Like, mm-hmm. Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky is meant to be kind of funny. So, yeah. But then also there are the new ones, right? Like Curse of Chucky, Cult of Chucky, I think. And mm-hmm. those, I'm pretty sure those star Brad Dourif's daughter, I want to say.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they star Brad Dourif's daughter. At least Curse of Chucky does. But what happened at Curse of Chucky and Cult of Chucky was they changed how Chucky looked. And, like, they kind of always have done that, but they massively changed how he looked. And he looked really stupid. So, like, no matter what, how good the movie was, like, when you see Chucky, you're like, you just, like, you can't take him seriously at all. And they're trying really hard to take him seriously again. But no, I will say I saw Child's Play, the most recent one, in the movie theater with what's his name?
Was it the one where Mark Hamill plays
Mark Hamill, yeah. That was just different. Like, the best thing about that one was the deaths. Like, I feel like you could take or leave Chucky. Like, he was just incidental to the movie. He just happened mm-hmm. to be in a Chucky movie. But the deaths were right on par with the original. And I think Mark Hamill did a pretty good job. But from what I understand, like, Brad Dourif and the people who own the rights to Child's Play were like, what the hell? Why don't we use Brad Dourif? So if I remember correctly, there was kind of a stink about, like, why aren't you honoring the original franchise? So that's my only thing about it is, like, you know, it's fine.
Gotcha. Yeah. I that mentioning Bride of Chucky is reminding me of probably one of my favorite older horror movies is Bride of Frankenstein.
Nice.
I finally got to watch that for the first time last year when I got the Universal Collection that had, like, Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, yes. The Mummy, The Wolfman, and there was one other one. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But out of all of them, Bride of Frankenstein really affected me personally.
Why is that?
Where I thought, well, I really liked how the movie, like, I watched both the first Frankenstein movie and then Bride of Frankenstein within, like, the same day. Mm-hmm. Like, I had come home, I watched the first one, I was like, yeah, that's good. That was good. I appreciate a lot of aspects of it, but it was good. And then I watched Bride of Frankenstein later that night, and I'm just like, this movie's amazing. This movie is leaps and bounds so much better and so much stronger in how it handles the tragedy of a being that's been brought back from the grave and no one wants to do anything with it. They're just afraid. They're scared of it. And, like, there is this manipulative scientist that's like, the best thing for this creature is to basically make another one for it to have a companion toward. Mm-hmm. And even that companion is like, no, I don't want anything to do with you either. With just a simple... It's very sad. I feel like it's one of those movies that I just did not expect it to catch me in an emotional way, in that way. And if I were to ever do anything in the Frankenstein universe, I want an entire movie with just him and the blind man. I want a whole 70 to 90 minute movie of the two of them bonding, being friends, and just allowing that story of it doesn't matter what the other person is, it's the company that you keep that is important, and that friendship is so strong. And it's like, I really loved every second of that scene. I was like, I don't want this scene to end. And then I decided to make myself feel better by rewatching Young Frankenstein and appreciating it way more now that I can watch the scene with Gene Hackman as the blind man accidentally dropping really hot soup on the monster's pants.
Interesting. I love that you like The Bride of Frankenstein so much, because, you know, the things are sort of divided about it. Like, some people get upset, you know, like, oh, there's this female character that was created just for the whims of the men, right? Mm-hmm. But then her outright, like, rejection of all of it, the role that she was created to fulfill, like, all of that stuff. And it kind of talks about, like, the fear of rejection, right? And there's all these other things that are going on in that movie that I don't think people pick up on like you did. So I don't know. I think that's really cool that you like that one, of all things.
I really do. And I remember just... Because the other monster movies are fun. They have cheesy aspects that are of the time that you can't really help with how Hollywood was back then, where they would not want to have... Like, the scariest thing you would see in Dracula is he comes up to someone, he's covered in darkness, and he raises his hand, and then the screen goes to black, and then you hear a woman screaming.
Yeah.
And you just assume, yeah, he bit her. He likely bit her. In fact, I'm pretty much 99.9% sure he bit her on the throat. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the monster in Bride of Frankenstein, he's dealing with the horror of just these people that don't understand him. That's what's scary, is just people looking at him, thinking him as, you're not worthy to exist, you're an abomination, and you deserve to die or be banished. And just seeing that with the amazing gothic lighting and tones and mist and all that, it was like, this is just hitting me on so many levels. And I really love that movie. I will probably watch it again this Halloween season as well.
Nice.
And I think my most excited, as far as like horror movies that I haven't seen yet that I'm going to finally watch that I haven't watched yet, is one of them is a John Carpenter movie, In the Mouths of Madness. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have.
I have been told that it is probably the best Lovecraftian movie ever.
Yes.
And I love my Lovecraft content, so I really would like to see it.
Okay, I you know what? I don't know about best anymore. I think it used to be. But yes, that is a fantastic movie. God, who's in that one? The guy from Jurassic Park, right?
Sam Neill.
Yes, thank you. So you have not seen it?
I have not seen it.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for you to see it now. It's a fantastic combination of like Lovecraft, but also Stephen King. Like, so nice. Like naturally I love it. Because it like centers around, you could say, I guess it's Lovecraftian, and then it centers around a writer and all of that stuff. But I think being in the modern day, there were some parallels to like Stephen King's life as well in it. Mm-hmm. So no spoilers, but I think you're going to like it. I really do.
I'm really excited. I also found out that on Amazon Prime, it was like $2.99 to rent, which is like, that's a steal right there.
Yeah.
I'll just go for it that way. And another one is Oculus. I'm going to finally watch Oculus.
So you haven't seen Oculus either?
Not yet.
That's another Mike Flanagan one.
Yep. I love Mike Flanagan. I think The Haunting of Hill House is, just in my opinion, the single greatest horror story I've ever experienced.
Ooh.
In any medium. I truly love that series, and I look forward to seeing his new show. I haven't started it yet.
Ooh, I just finished it.
Is it good?
Ooh. I'm going to be the voice of dissent and say, because I've seen literally all of Mike Flanagan's other stuff, I don't think it's his best work.
Gotcha.
But it is good because it's Mike Flanagan. So, yeah.
I'm glad. I was about to say, like, I thought this was going to be like his one dissent.
No, I'm fair. Like, it's not as good as I know he's capable of. But mm-hmm. I think he was trying to say more in Midnight Mass than he has in other things.
So, did you enjoy Bly Manor?
I loved Bly Manor. Yeah, for sure.
I think that's a very underrated show.
I think so, too. I know Hill House gets all the recognition, but I didn't see Hill House. I saw Bly Manor first, and then I saw Hill House. So to me, I'm a little biased. I think I like Bly Manor better.
That's fair. That is fair. The funny thing with that show is when I started watching Bly Manor, I started to notice like they're using a lot of similar actors from Hill House. And I thought, are we going to have some connective tissue here? Is this an alternate universe? What's going on? And no, it's just, he just likes using those people mm-hmm. and they're here and it's all good. It's all good. So it's very much one of those shows that I feel like I could go back and watch it a second time and really appreciate it a lot more.
Yeah.
But with Haunting of Hill House, there were moments of that show that I just never forgot. Mm-hmm. Like, they stuck with me both in a wonderful way and a scary way.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching it again, there were so many details that I completely missed the first time that I just thought, oh my God, I can't believe they were already talking about that.
Yeah.
And I knew a particular jump scare was coming, but I remember it being the single greatest jump scare I've ever seen. And I filmed my reaction to it knowing it was coming. And it still gave me a, let me back up here real quick. Oh, God!
That is perfect.
you never, even knowing that it's coming, it's still, and the best part about it, there's no music for it when that moment happens.
I love that about Mike Flanagan. He doesn't do the audio swells and stuff that you get in other places. I remember
someone doing a review for Halloween. I think it might have been Chris Stuckman, where there was he made a comparison of just someone just showing up out of the blue to like pat a character's shoulder. It might have been Professor or Dr. Loomis just like knocking into his shoulders. Was, oh, Jesus. You all right? Yeah. There was no music, but you felt like you felt the tension with that person, like, oh, crap. Whereas, and then Chris added in that same scene, but with really loud music in there. It was just, it was just silly. It didn't feel right.
Yeah.
So having that silence, it helps. It really helps. And even just little subtle things really add to the tension of it. And it's all those aspects that make me really excited to see how is Mike Flanagan going to scare me this time with Oculus.
I know. I really love the like quiet confidence that Mike Flanagan has. Like to say, like I don't know if you heard the story about how he got the gig to do Dr. Sleep or not. Have you heard that story?
I have not.
Oh, so people said that Dr. Sleep couldn't be made. right? Because of the legacy of The Shining and because it's a very difficult story to bring to the picture. And he was like, I'd like to try. And they're like, I don't know. So he asked Stephen King and Stephen King just said, no. So Mike Flanagan was like, okay, fine. If you don't want me to touch Dr. Sleep, how about I try Gerald's Game? And I don't know if you've seen that or not, but...
No, but I've been meaning to.
It's a Stephen King story. It's sort of horror, but not really. But Mike Flanagan did Gerald's Game, and it was fantastic. And he showed it to Stephen King, and Stephen King was like, okay, all right, I'll let you try Dr. Sleep. And so he was, you know, like Mike Flanagan just lost his freaking mind, right? And he does the whole movie. And then he says Stephen King has to watch the movie and approve it before it can go to market. So Mike Flanagan, I think in an interview, told the story of like watching his own movie in an empty movie theater with just Stephen King watching it. Like, and being the most scared he ever was in his entire life. Like, oh my God, he's going to hate this. He's going to hate this so much. But then after he saw Dr. Sleep, he was like, okay, I was wrong. I like it. And was like really impressed and happy with it. And, you know, like that must have been such a relief to like sit there in an empty movie theater with Stephen freaking King and hope he likes your movie. Like...
He had two things that I really feel like were winning factors with Dr. Sleep. He handled The Shining references and throwbacks in a way that were very fitting for the story and the character arcs. That was a very effective way to tell the story. The other thing he had, and I'm very biased about this. It also had Rebecca Ferguson in it.
Yes! How good was she?
Lady Jessica herself. I love that woman so much.
She
I really
do.
She was
phenomenal and for so many different reasons. Like, one, why don't women get to be villains? Like, why is it that we never get to be villains? And when we do... It's always, you know, your in Thor, what's her name, or whatever. It's always
Hela
in a skin tight suit, you know, really super sexy. But then she comes along in Dr. Sleep and it's like, no, you know what? I'm gonna wear a flowy shirt, some pants, and a fucking top hat. You know, like.
it was a great costume. It was a great attire for her to have, and it. Not only makes her stand out, but I like I liked that she herself had a storyline and goals that she wanted to accomplish. And it almost reminded me of some others. I can't really think of what the story was off the top of my head, but it was actually a Star Wars story that like you're almost. You're not really rooting for the villain, but you kind of want to see what really happens with them. You're almost just as engaged with their storyline as you are with Ewan McGregor and the whole thing with that girl.
Oh, totally. Her motivations make sense.
Yeah, I love when that happens, and I'd like to hopefully create villains that have good motivations with things, or at least motivations that are understandable.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the fun things about creating characters like that is seeing like how can you make decisions that seem like it would make sense in their minds, but to another person it's that ain't right.
Yeah, you know, her portrayal of that character like re-upped my desire to play villains again. Because like you know, I mean, I play villains, right? But like I always end up playing the sexy character villains. And my reprieve from that, like to get a break from all the sexy villain ladies that I play, I like playing characters that are prickly, like just kind of bitchy, you know, because I'm really good at that. And so it's my way of being a villain without being hypersexualized, you know, to get away from that. But it was nice to see her doing a villain that isn't oversexualized, but is also not a bitch. And I think that only really works in movies, right? Not just audio media, but still, it re-upped my love of playing villains. And I was like, thank you. Finally, somebody can pull this off. And I was really happy with it.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that we both have that appreciation for Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I have one more question for you, and then I think we are going to wrap up here. To conclude our Voices That Cooks episode, I really wanted to ask, do you have a favorite recipe that you love to make?
Oh my gosh. Yes. It is kind of complicated, but I do have a recipe that I love. I don't know how to share it or anything, but it is called mole. Are you familiar with mole?
I am not.
So mole is a Mexican like sauce. You cook. It's you use it usually with chicken. And so it's I think of it almost like an enchilada sauce, but it is often just paired with grilled chicken and a bunch of other stuff on the side, like a guisada almost. And it is one of the longest cooking things that you can make in Mexican food. So it's meant to be a sauce that cooks for a few hours. And it is one of the most complex sauces that you can make in Mexican cuisine, but it's worth it. It's worth the wait. Do you want to know what's in it?
Yes.
Okay. If I can remember correctly, it has a whole bunch of different chiles in it. Okay. Like chile ancho, chile guajillo, chipotle chiles. You put raisins in it. Like usually you like puree them or liquefy them or whatever. Some people put dates in them instead, but raisins in general. You put serrano peppers. So bunches of different peppers. you do almonds as well. You do sesame seeds, anise as well, cinnamon, peanuts. you do
interesting
cumin, and Mexican dark chocolate, and
ooh,
brown sugar. And you add other stuff like there's, you know, salt, pepper, like onions, stuff like that. But you just throw all that stuff together and you let it simmer for hours. And what happens is the chiles get nice and sweet and smoky. And it sort of attaches itself to the peanuts that you put in there. And it is like this really dark brown because you're putting chocolate in it, right? So it's this dark brown sauce, but it's got like a little bit of sweet, a little bit of spicy, a little bit of saltiness in there. And you put it over chicken and it is the best. It's so good. So I'll have to send you a recipe.
Please do. What is that called again?
It's called mole, M-O-L-E.
M-O-L-E. Mm-hmm. Alrighty then.
Yeah, there are a bunch of different styles depending on where in Mexico you're having it. But generally speaking, those are the ingredients that are in it.
Gotcha. I definitely look forward to trying that. And
I thought you would like that.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And I'm hopefully going to be able to maybe concoct some. Well, if we have any ham left over, I can make maybe a breakfast quesadilla for dinner, which is very yummy. But that just sounds like a very heavenly dish that I have to try at some point.
Yeah, there's a lot of ingredients, but the cool part is you just put them all together and then let them simmer for like 4 hours. So you just, you know, check it every now and then, but it's so good. It's got like all the different tastes that you want in a sauce, sweet and salty and savory and nutty, and it's so good. It's my favorite thing. It's like my, I don't know, my healing food.
Your healing food.
Yes.
I would say if I had healing food, it would probably be minestrone soup. That's probably my healing food.
That is good. There's something about the power of soup to really like make you feel better. Yeah.
And every time, even back when I had COVID, minestrone soup was, I wouldn't call it a lifesaver, but it was a mental saver, if you will.
Sure.
I felt good while I ate it. And it has such good flavor and all the good stuff in there, and the beef works so well with it. And there was even one point I actually made minestrone stew, where I just had like a big thing of chuck roast in a casserole dish, and then all of the other ingredients for minestrone soup just put in the dish and just let that sit for three hours in a low temperature to let it all heat and mix nicely. Mm-hmm. We also, I think, put potatoes in there too.
Nice.
It's very good.
That sounds yummy.
It is very yummy. I'll have to make that again at some point. And also the last thing I really want to mention also, in case, because we heard Melissa do this very briefly, but I also want to point out how awesome of a singer you are.
Aww.
You don't have to do any singing right now, but you are fantastic on the vocals, you are fantastic with the singing, and you're also fantastic at being a wonderful human being. So thank you so, so much for being on Voices That Cook. I am thrilled that we had such a fun time today, and
yeah.
I'm sure all of you enjoyed listening to Melissa as well. And if they want to hear more of you, where can they find you on the interwebs?
Find me on social media, Melissa Medina VO on everywhere. Yeah. And you can find some of my stuff on hearmelissa.com too, but I'm easiest to catch on Twitter probably. So yeah, say hi.
Yes, please do say hello to her. And if you want to follow me, you're welcome to follow me on Instagram at TheVoiceThatCooks and on Twitter at VoiceThatCooks. And those will be where you can not only get all of my food photos and trip photos and photos of me talk or stuff of me talking about Dune and all sorts of stuff. Feel free to, you know, hear all that fun stuff from me and everything else. And it's just, I've had such a blast doing this show so far, and this is definitely one of my favorites so far. I'm very lucky to call you my friend, and I'm very lucky to have you on the show. Thank you so much, my
Thank
friend,
you.
For being on here.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
And for those of you who, you're welcome, and if for I need to continue talking at least for another minute, William, just for another minute. So, if you enjoyed the show, there we go. If you enjoyed the show, please do leave us a review wherever you're able to do reviews on your podcast app you're listening to this on, and let us know what you thought of the show. Let us know. And if there's any recipes that maybe this episode has inspired you to want to make, maybe if anyone decides to make a Michael Myers cake, feel free to share that. Send us pictures. Let us see what your recipe was. And if you tried that that one recipe that Melissa mentioned, tell me it one more time.
Mole.
Mole. If you make your own mole, I'd love to see how it looks.
Yes.
And that's about it. And I guess if we were to have some sort of outro, it would be enjoy the dish, enjoy the show, and enjoy your lives.
Love it. Take care.
I think that's not a bad intro or outro. Sorry. That's actually, yeah, I'd go with that.
We'll
see how it sticks. Alrighty then. So that's it for the show. And thank you for listening to Voices That Cook. Good morning, good night, and bye-bye.